pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, our one podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
Well, the week has arrived. Good afternoon. Welcome in as we tackle yet another day here. We appreciate your time, and let's get right to it with some headlines and then a guest waiting to give us some updates on the spring football war. So Hugh Freeze is focused. Did you hear me correctly? Focused on culture, relationships, in rebuilding Auburn football. If you heard those headlines or saw those headlines exactly a year ago, you are correct. But after a disappointing season, Freeze is hitting the refresh button. So what about Shedeur Sanders and Shiloh? They have a message for players in the portal. Hit them on the DM and Instagram, and we might have a spot for you on our Instagram page. I don't know about our football team. Colorado can't seem to do anything but get attention. They can't win, but they do get a lot of media flutter. Terrion Arnold could be the first cornerback off the board in the 24 draft. That is 1 week and 1 day ago. What does he have to say about all this? Well, he'll be with us in an hour and 10 minutes. The team that he just left is the University of Alabama, of course, and a lot of people are still trying to sort out what happened during the spring drills. Alex Scarborough covers the team, and he joins us. Alex, always great to see you, talk to you again. Good afternoon. Tell us what, if anything, we learned from Kalen DeBoer's first spring in Tuscaloosa.
Well, we learned that the scoring format was different. I mean, after 13 years of the way Nick Saban did things, I guess it was time for a change, and more than anything, I think spoke to just where this roster is right now. Instead of doing one team versus another team, they just went offense versus defense. And in that format, it was kind of hard to figure out certain things, but it did sort of speak to, you know, where they needed some help in terms of numbers now that the transfer portal's open, the offensive line, defensive backfield, on and on. I thought the quarterbacks looked really good, specifically Ty Simpson, the backup quarterback. I think he solidified that second spot. And then you're just looking for playmakers at other positions. Jeremy Bernard looks like a playmaker receiver, but I think they need some help there. They need some guys to step up. Jalen Hale's injury really hurt in that respect. And the defense was just kind of hard to get a gauge on because they were so vanilla. They were without Jaheim Otis, one of their best interior defensive linemen, without Jahad Campbell, one of their best interior linebackers. So a little difficult to gauge, but you know, it's a work in progress at Alabama, especially when you're talking about a roster overhaul that's had to take place and a new coaching staff. Nick Saban was there, but he was there in a completely different capacity than we're used to.
And Alex, I want to talk about that because we haven't seen a lot of Nick Saban in Tuscaloosa. He was very prominent, obviously, front row of DeBoer's press conference. He was back again, this time occasionally on the field, but mostly in a skybox. As somebody who covered him often and regularly during his tenure, what was it like to see him really with not much to do on Saturday?
Yeah, it was really odd because everything about Saturday familiar, from the drive down to Tuscaloosa, hitting traffic, to the nice weather, to the allergies kicking in because it's nice weather in the South in April. And then you go to the captain ceremony where the three captains from the team get their handprint and their footprint set in cement from the season ago. And there's Nick Saban. And you're like, oh, you know, this is all familiar. And then he gets up there and he's smiling. And he says, I'm one of you now. I'm a fan. And it's like, wait, when did that happen? I know he's been retired for a few months now, but it was sort of jarring to see him in this new environment, jarring to see him kind of trotted out there as a representative of the university instead of the guy leading the football program. And, you know, it's a tough line to walk, right? Like, you know, how involved do you want to be without stepping on Kalen DeBoer's toes? You're making some weird visuals when you've got Kalen DeBoer on the field and Nick Saban's up in a skybox looking on, right? Like you wonder what's going through his head, but they're all sort of navigating this together. I think Nick Saban trying to be a sounding board when called upon, and not more than that. Like I said, not trying to step on toes. And then Kalen DeBoer wanting to get as much feedback as he can while trying to institute his own program. Thought it was really interesting that Kalen asked Nick to address the team before the spring game, and that was the first time Nick had talked to the team since January. So I'm sure it had to be a strange moment for them to see their coach of only a few months back. And it was equally strange being in the press box and seeing Nick Saban exit through the press box. I kind of half-heartedly wanted to joke, where's your credential? We need to throw you out of here. He's one of us now, but I guess doesn't need a credential to get around Bryant Denny Stadium.
Yeah, Alex, I mean, there are a lot of schools of thought to this. And quite frankly, there is no precedent because the last time the greatest coach in college football retired, he died 26 days later. So it's not like what others did really matters here because there's no one who's ever been in this spot. But your thought process on Saban even showing up, was he required? Was it really necessary? Do you think he was there because his wife wanted him to be? He wanted to be? Kalen DeBoer wanted him? I realize I've given you a lot to chew on there.
Yeah, I don't think he was required to be, but I think it would have been auspicious if he wasn't there, right? Like if he was sitting at home on Masters weekend watching golf instead of at A-Day, when he's supposed to still be involved, when he's still on the payroll as an advisor to the university, when he has said, I'm going to be around for Kalen, I'm going to be around for this team, it would have been a little strange if he wasn't there. So that's why, like, it's such a narrow gap to walk. Like, if you're around too much, you look like you're overbearing. If you're not around at all, people are going to say, oh, is he not invested? Is he not believe in Kalen DeBoer? So there's a little bit of a tough path to walk, but it's I think what to be what you have to feel good about if you're the athletic director, Greg Byrne, or if you're an Alabama fan in general, is that there seems to be a pretty good relationship between Nick Saban and Kalen DeBoer. There was a lot of mutual respect before Saban even retired. And, you know, Saban had kicked the tires on some of Kalen's assistants, clearly liked the scheme, respected him in terms of the coaching search process. And then throughout everything that came next, trying to be a resource, trying to be when called upon, but not when he wasn't called upon. So again, you're not overbearing. So, you know, time will tell how this relationship plays out. It's going to be really interesting, right, if Nick Saban's on the set of College Game Day on a Saturday and he's in a position where he might have to criticize Alabama and Kalen DeBoer. That'll be a weird thing to see how he works with that. But I think both men are sort of on the same page. And Kalen in particular seems to be a guy who's not threatened by the specter of Nick Saban, but also confident enough in his own ability to say, I don't know everything, so why wouldn't I use the greatest coach of all time as a resource? So so far good, but again, we haven't hit a football game that requires a record and normal scoring yet. So if that happens, things could go up. No.
And Alex, you mentioned being on the payroll. I'll add my two cents of having been around a lot of coaches on television sets. And anyone who believes that Nick Saban is going to be critical of Alabama is sadly mistaken. He won't be. You know that, and I know that.
Mm-hmm. No, there's no way. That's not how he's hardwired. And those are his guys. And he'd have to, by extension, be critical of the football players he recruited and sold on going to the University of Alabama. It's not what he's going to be. Now, he might be critical of decision-making in terms of a very narrow window of, why did you do this on third down? Nick is brilliant at talking about schematic type things, but no, I don't expect him to go up there with a flamethrower and say that, you know, certain decisions shouldn't have been made. He's going to keep it strictly football at all times.
And I realize we may not know a lot about this, but you mentioned he's on the payroll. Do we have any idea what that requires?
No. we know he has an office. We don't know how many times he's supposed to be in there. There has been no release of information as far as what his specific title is, what his specific salary is, any of those things. It's not quite an emeritus position. Like, You know, I remember going to visit the University of Florida, and Steve Spurrier's literally in Ben Hill Griffin Stadium and popping into his office after he played golf in the morning for a few hours. It was a routine thing. I don't know if this is going to be that. I think he's more going to come at it from the perspective of, when you need me, let me know and I will be there. But I don't think he's a guy who's just going to show up just to show up. It'd be very interesting to see if this is strictly a aiding the football program and fundraising type position. I have a feeling that's primarily what it's going to be. And as much as aiding the football program could be a help, I think you put Nick Saban in the fundraising environment, I think that's where Alabama probably gets its most bang for its buck.
Alex Scarborough joining us from 24/7. Always appreciate it very, very much. We are off and running today. A lot more to deal with here on a very busy Wednesday afternoon. We mentioned some of the guests that we'll be talking to and your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
We are back here, and Terry and Arnold a little bit later on. More guests as well. Let's check in with Mike in California. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Paul. Hey, thanks for having me on. Hey, love the interview that you just had, and that's one thing as a Bama alum that that excites me, and I think goes a little bit unheralded, is the fact that Saban's going to be around. You know, he loves that program. I can't imagine that he and DeBoer won't be watching film together. And I think what Saban's going to provide is more accelerated, sensibilities to the conference that he's in now that he doesn't have any experience with. So I think best as it can. I think the fact that he's going to be involved in the program is a second set of eyes and experience. I think that bodes well for us. I was excited before. Even had Saban ridden off into the sunset, but I'm really excited knowing that Saban's going to be around. And I think DeBoer appreciates it. So I'll hang up and listen. I appreciate the show, bro.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it. Jay is up next in South Carolina. Hey, Jay.
Good afternoon, Paul.
Hey there.
Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I realize I'm still new here, but I might respond to the guy that called in and said that the SEC was overrated. If I'm not mistaken, his team plays in the Big Ten.
That's right.
And they're two good teams up there, Ohio State, Michigan. There's nothing wrong with them, but there's two. And in the ACC, there's two good teams there, is Florida State and Clemson. Nothing wrong with those two teams, but there are two of them. The SEC's got Alabama, Georgia, LSU, Missouri. And I'm just saying these things because he probably don't know it. Don't sound like he listens to football or watches it or knows anything about it, but I just want to respond to this guy that, you know, the SEC just means more. War Eagle. Thank you, Paul.
Bash is up next in Boulder. Hey, Bash.
Thank you for taking my call, Bash Brother Paul. I cannot wait, Paul, later to the show. You're going to have Taryn on in an interview. Could you, just like you did a few weeks ago, Paul, with AJ Styles, could you relay a question to him for me?
I'll see what I can do.
Well, with the draft coming up, I was just wondering if you could ask him, who does he think is the best NFL cornerback in the league, and who does he model his game after? I believe he's going to answer that question with the same answer, Patrick Surtain II. So if you could pass that question, that would be greatly appreciated. And, Paul, I got to talk to you about some of these callers you had yesterday. They were crazy. First, let me just address Todd from Shelby. He was telling Dale in Colorado he's going to send Bash to go kick his ass. Todd, amigo, tranquilo, relax, don't worry. It's September 28th, we're going to kick that ass. We don't have to talk about it. We do our talk on the field, yes, sir. Now, Paul, also the other caller I wanted to ask you about was John from St. Louis. You know, when he called during the Super Bowl week and was giving you recommendations on who should be singing during the halftime show, I thought this man was insane. And then yesterday, he's giving you recommendations on who should be singing the Paul Feinbaum show song. And weren't the recommendations of someone from California and another person from Australia who has passed away?
Yeah, I don't mind the 78-year-old, but I do mind the person that died 9 years ago.
Like, I think, Paul, like, let's be honest here with John from St. Louis. I don't know if he actually is working in a juvenile detention center. If he is, I think one of those juveniles may have hit him upside his head and concussed him, and no one has diagnosed him ever since then, Paul. And I think he's just been calling into this show, and whatever's on his mind has just been floundering all over the place. I mean, there's not any marijuana in Colorado that can explain the craziness of this man's comments. But if there is, I would love to know where it is as well.
Well, Bash, you pass that along to us, and have a good toke for everybody. Davis is up next.
Hey, Paul, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Hey, it's a first timer here, and I just, first thing I wanted to say, I actually wanted to call out Jay, because I'm all for the SEC and being one conference supporting each other, but it's the damn Auburn fans, Paul, that try to piggyback off the SEC and claim the pride of all our teams. It just grinds my gears. I was wondering what you thought about that.
Well, it probably doesn't bother me as much as it does to you, because you're probably grew up disliking them. I didn't, but I appreciate your call. Thank you very, very much. Let's check in with Colby in Mississippi. Hey, Colby.
Hey, how you doing, man?
Hey there.
Yeah, man, I was calling, man. I was talking about Ole Miss. Man, they went out there and got some guys out the portal, and, man, they going to have a shot, man, to go deep off in the playoffs. And what Lane and Pete been put together on their defense and got all the pieces all the way around and got the puzzle together, man. I'm surprised. I want to know what y'all think about that.
Yeah, Colby, I think everybody is really upbeat on Ole Miss. I think when you start seeing the preseason predictions, and they'll be coming in very quickly here, Ole Miss will be easily in the top 10, maybe in the top 5 or 6. I think they'll be pegged to go to the playoffs. So, I mean, this is possibly, at least potentially, going to be one of the biggest years in Ole Miss history, probably in 50 or 60 years. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Kevin in West Palm, you're on the air. Hey, Kevin.
Hi, Paul. How are you?
Very well. Thank you.
Yeah, we talked. The Monday, I actually spoke to you about, you obviously remembered me from when I was talking to you about the Greg Schiano.
Right.
Yeah. I had a big question about Lane Kiffin, because, you know, I went to FAU and Lane Kiffin was a coach there at that time. I graduated by the time when he was there, and he actually, before I graduated, during the before COVID year, when he left for the Ole Miss job and all that stuff. And what's your preference on him for this season?
Well, Kevin,
now that he's been,
I'm expecting them to be really good. I will repeat many, many times how they are going to be a projected playoff team. Hey, thank you for the call. We are a week and a day away from the NFL draft. We'll talk to one of the leading experts, Phil Yates, coming up in just one moment.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we are just a week and a day away from the eagerly anticipated draft, and our next guest has dug pretty deep into what likely is going to happen. Phil Yates and Mel Kiper Jr., you see Williams at the number one position. That seems to be a foregone conclusion. Then what happens then? Is it Jaden Daniels, May? You got a lot of choices, including Malik Nabers, looking like the maybe the second wide receiver. It's a pretty rich draft. Phil Yates joining us. Phil, many thanks. Let me start with the top position here as we talk. There's always something that could happen, but is this most likely? Is it a cinch that we're going to see Caleb Williams number one off the board?
Yeah, Paul, there are very few things that I feel certain about in life, but 8 days away from the NFL draft starting, Caleb Williams going to the Chicago Bears is now on that list. And I think we're actually getting to the point where we're starting to feel better and better about the likelihood of Jaden Daniels also being the presumptive pick at number two, which is a different way of saying that perhaps the NFL draft actually begins at pick number three. But Caleb Williams has been the number one ranked player on my board since the start of this process, which basically begins the day after the draft ends last year. So for nearly 12 straight months, Caleb Williams has been the number one player on my board and the presumed number one pick, the Chicago Bears. And their GM, Ryan Poles, their head coach, Matt Eberflus, has not come out and said flatly that it would be Caleb Williams, but they've started to talk about Caleb Williams in a manner that makes you think they feel really good about the player he's going to be for their franchise. And I do think we feel good about how things have set up for Caleb Williams in Chicago, a wide receiver core that starts with DJ Moore and Keenan Allen. That's a pretty darn good duo for any rookie quarterback to have to throw to right away.
You know, even last year, there, when most people thought it was going to be Bryce Young, there was still some wondering about CJ Stroud, and there's a lot of wondering now after the pick was made. But how unusual is it that that one and two are pretty much automatic a week out?
Yeah, I would say that's not something we've seen a ton of late. I mean, you think about some notable quarterback draft classes over the past five or six editions of the NFL draft. Kenny Pickett going in the 20s for the Pittsburgh Steelers is the first quarterback off the board. Some thought Malik Willis could be a first-round pick that year. He ends up going in the third round. Same with Desmond Ridder after his great career at Cincinnati. You go a little bit further back to the 2018 draft class, and I recall the night before the draft, there was still uncertainty as to who would be the number one quarterback taken in that class that ended up being Baker Mayfield, but it also featured Sam Darnold, who ended up going third overall, Josh Allen, who went seventh overall to the Bills, Josh Rosen, who went 10th overall to the Cardinals. Lamar Jackson went 32nd. You can make a case he's been the best quarterback in that class, certainly along with Josh Allen, but of the four that went in the top 10, it feels like none of us necessarily forecasted how it would go, but Baker Mayfield at one point felt like he was not anywhere close to being the number one pick in the draft. The Browns did that. So the fact that we have, I wouldn't say total clarity, but I would say closing in on clarity on the first two picks in the 2024 NFL draft, rather unusual.
Let's talk about Jaden Daniels for a second. What reasons have so many coalesced around the idea that he is the second pick off this board?
Yeah, so obviously he was the best player in college football, rewarded with the Heisman Trophy last year as a result of that. I think there are so many traits to his game that are just so, so special. We've talked about the deep range accuracy, which for those that are watching on TV, they just saw right now in that throw to Brian Thomas Jr. We all know the dual threat ability. He had over 1,000 rushing yards last season, Paul, and if you take a filter of all players with at least 100 carries last year, no one had more yards per attempt in the FBS than Jaden Daniels. He changes the math so dramatically. Right? I mean, the number of snaps you go back and watch when linebackers can't decide if they should be running forwards or backwards, if they should be running right or left. It's just remarkable watching that LSU offense. But maybe the trait that I like the most about Jaden Daniels is something I call clutch production. When LSU was in a gotta-have-it situation, Jaden Daniels had it. You know just how bad that LSU defense was. That was one of the worst in a long time down there in Baton Rouge. It led to plenty of staff changes under Brian Kelly on the defensive side of the ball. But you think about some of the games last year where, if not for Jaden Daniels, that team was losing. They're getting wiped. Whether it was the Florida game where he took over from start to finish with 350-plus passing yards and 200-plus rushing yards, the only player to ever do that in a single game in FBS history. Missouri, which was stacked defensively. Darius Robinson going to be a first-round pick. Ennis Rakestraw Jr. could be a first-round pick. Multiple other players in that Missouri defense could be drafted, and that was a darn good team there in Columbia. Jaden Daniels in the fourth quarter faced with countless gotta-have-it situations, third and long, deep in his own territory, found a way and really willed LSU to victory.
We're talking to Field Yates. I want to ask you now about Brock Bowers. A year ago, he may have been significantly higher. He sometimes it's the position, a weird position to say the least, but he is not in the top 10 in your draft. Talk a little bit about where he lands and why.
I think it's somewhere between 10 and 15, Paul, if I had to guess a range. And I think part of the reason why you don't see Brock Bowers in the first 10 picks is as simple as there's a pretty darn good chance that four of the first 10 picks are going to be quarterbacks. So 40% of the top 10 is accounted for by the most important position in the entire NFL. On top of that, you've got three wide receivers that, despite the brilliance of Brock Bowers, have a higher grade on my board, and Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, and Rome Odunze, who are players 3, 4, and 6 on my overall big board. Brock Bowers all the way down at number 7. So not too far behind. But the NFL values wide receivers more than they do tight ends. Tyreek Hill makes a maximum of $30 million per year as the highest paid wide receiver in the NFL. George Kittle is the highest paid tight end in the NFL, and he makes a maximum of $17 million per year. So the NFL has put a different price tag on wide receivers than they have tight ends. And while this doesn't bother me that much, I do think the fact that Brock doesn't have a verified 40 time is one piece of the puzzle that's missing. If you've got a tight end who runs a 4.45 like Kyle Pitts did a couple of years ago, then maybe people are saying, hey, you combine all the obvious stuff on the tape, off the charts football character for Brock Bowers in a 4.45, why wouldn't this guy go in the first 10 picks? Because he's effectively used as a wide receiver with that kind of speed. It's not Brock's fault. I don't blame him for not running a 40. This guy's plenty fast, that much is for sure. But that might be, if you're sort of listing all the reasons why he might not go in the top 10, it's not number 1, 2, or 3, but it's certainly it's somewhere there on the list if people are trying to figure out why Brock doesn't go that early.
Your thoughts on Malik Nabers from LSU?
Yeah, fourth overall player on my board, Paul, and it's nip and tuck between he and Marvin Harrison Jr. for that number one wide receiver spot in the entire draft class. I think he's the most explosive player in the entire draft class, and I'm not sure it's particularly close. I mean, what he was able to do last year for LSU, he's a blur, right? I mean, every time you see him, he's making somebody miss. He actually forced 27 missed tackles last season, one of the best totals for any wide receiver in all of FBS. And I think what's really cool about Malik Nabers' game is that we all know the speed, right? I mean, that throw to Alabama early in the first quarter, huge game down there in Tuscaloosa. That speed is very obvious. He can burn right past even the best secondaries in all of the NFL, but he can take an ordinary pass and turn it into an extraordinary reception. 7 or 8 yard dig, curl, out route. Next thing you know, it's Malik Nabers off to the races. He broke a lot of ankles this past season among some really good competition because you just go through the SEC. I mean, I can think of 5, 7, 8 corners that might get drafted from the SEC, and that might be a conservative number. Pretty much none of them had any answer for Malik Nabers last season.
Let's talk about Alabama players. We have one coming on here in a couple of minutes, Terrion Arnold. You have McKinstry. You have Latham. Obviously, Dallas Turner. That's a lot of talent heading out in the first round.
It sure is. I could see all four of those guys being first-round picks, and I think that Terrion Arnold, J.C. Latham, and Dallas Turner might all have a chance to be top 15 picks. But Terrion, one of the great stories in this draft, a guy who, of course, began his Alabama career as a safety, and then he transitions to corner, and he had a great come-up this past year, Paul. 5 interceptions, 12 pass breakups, both tied for second most in the SEC last season. Incredibly physical, has good instincts, has excellent juice, excellent short-area quickness. Now, his 40 speed wasn't top-notch for a corner, and that might be the reason why, if he does fall to cornerback 2 behind Quinyon Mitchell from Toledo, that might be the best explanation why. But when you factor in the skill set, the production, the fact that he played for a Nick Saban defense, you know he's got great football intelligence and understanding of offensive passing game concepts. I think all those reasons give you a lot of confidence to believe that Terrion Arnold could end up being a top 15 or 17 pick in this year's draft.
And let me ask you about Turner for a second before we wrap up, because people really like him on the edge. It's a key position in the NFL.
It certainly is, and he had just a remarkable final season. The SEC Defensive Player of the Year with double-digit sacks. Obviously, they needed to fill the void of Will Anderson, and he really stepped up. You know, Chris Braswell on the other side as well, but it was the Dallas Turner show in so many ways. And beyond the obvious edge traits that he brings to the table, Paul, he can play some stand-up inside linebacker. He won't do that at the NFL level all that much, but it speaks to his versatility. And then there's the tape process, and then there's the post-draft process. So the film during the fall matters the most, but the combine matters too, and Dallas Turner was one of the best performers regardless of position at the combine. Just scary athletic ability for a kid who, you know, a 3-year player at Alabama. This is a young prospect as well who made a splash early on during his time at Tuscaloosa, and I think has a chance to become the next in a long line of very talented front seven players from the Crimson Tide.
Before you go, Field, I want to ask you about what many believe is one of the hottest prospects in the draft, and that's Field Yates. You'll be part of the coverage. There was a big article about you in the Boston Globe the other day. I know you're here to talk about other things, but just from a personal journey standpoint, what has this been like for you?
Yeah, Paul, I mean, I'm incredibly humbled, and I appreciate you asking this. You know, almost makes you uncomfortable talking about yourself, but I'd be remiss not to be thankful for the opportunity to be a part of the ABC broadcast next Thursday and Friday, and then on ESPN on Saturday as we get into rounds 4 through 7. So, you know, the goal of people in our industry is to never be the story. It is always about telling the stories of others, and my hope is that next week we can do a really good job spotlighting 267 separate prospects who will be drafted, and I am honored to be just a teeny tiny cog in the wheel that's part of the ESPN and ABC draft production.
Well, Field, thank you for making time. It is always so much fun to talk to you.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you very much. Field Yates joining us from ESPN next week's draft. A week from tonight, a week and a day from tonight on Thursday night. We'll take a short break. We are back with your phone calls and more guests right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.
And Marty and McGee, you can catch them bright and early Saturday morning, 7 a.m. And we're back, and Coy is out in Honolulu. Hello, Coy.
Oh, cool. How you doing, Paul?
We're doing great. Thank you.
How you doing? I just wanted to say hi, and I just wanted to wish you the best. I know you get a lot of, offensive calls, but I just wanted to wish you aloha and thank you for listening to us and taking our calls. And I just wanted to give you some aloha, man. So take care and have a
great weekend. Thank you, and aloha to you. Have a wonderful day out there as you're getting ready for lunch. Late brunch, I should say, in Honolulu. Thank you very, very much. Robert in Mississippi is up next. Hey, Robert.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I got some things I want to say to you. And I know how modest you are, but I'm going to tell you anyway. You are one of a kind. You are a great person. I like the way you carry yourself when the calls that you get online. You are a great person to take calls in and don't get mad behind them. And you just don't know how many people's lives that you touch on this phone, on your call and on your show, because so many people wait to when you get ready to come on just to hear your voice and hear the things you have to say and the way you carry yourself and conduct yourself. And I do appreciate everything that you do for everybody.
Robert, thank you very, very much on behalf of all of us. You have a fantastic day. Thank you very, very much. Let's continue with more phone calls. And Kevin is in West Palm. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Paul, it's me again. I just wanted to appreciate every information that you always provide. And I just wanted to say thank you so much, Paul, because you're obviously the best SEC analyst and everything. And I just want to say thank you.
Kevin, thank you for that. Thank you very, very much. You be well. Steve is up next. Hey, Steve, go right ahead.
Yes, Paul. I spoke with you yesterday about Bobby Wallace and the University of
right,
North Alabama
sure.
being first three-peat champions that I can remember. But the question I had for you was, since Leibold has left Michigan and they've accepted their probation or penalties and fines and stuff, what do you think about any of the wins having to be forfeited?
Well, remember something, Steve. What we saw yesterday was the first half of the NCAA investigation into Michigan. This had nothing to do with Connor Stallions. It had nothing to do with sign stealing. This was a situation that occurred during COVID, and it had already been litigated, and Harbaugh would not acknowledge that he had any wrongdoing, and therefore the case kept going, which made the second case more serious. So really, nothing came out of it. I know there's some mumbo-jumbo about being on probation and fines. None of that matters. The second case will probably not be a big deal either, because Harbaugh is gone. So it might make it more difficult if he was still there. It might make it more difficult for him should he ever decide to come back to college, which I don't think he will. Ultimately, it is a non-event. Thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it. Cookie is in Georgia. Hey, Cookie, go right ahead.
Hey, Coach Feinbaum, how you doing, man?
We are doing great.
I would like to take this opportunity to introduce myself to Feinbaum Nation. I go by the name of Cookie. I'm a University of Georgia supporter. And if you'll give me just a few seconds, I'm going to run through some things, and I'm going to kind of hang up and get out of your way.
Please.
Number one, all you younger callers that call into our wonderful show, his name ain't Paul. His name ain't Feinbaum, and it ain't Hey You or whatever. His name is Coach Feinbaum, Mr. Paul, or Mr. Feinbaum, or either make it simple and call him Your Majesty.
Like
Next
that.
Up, Big Ten people, give up this rhetoric you got going on about wanting to partner up with the SEC and quit trying to patronize Mr. Paul. We don't like you. We don't need you. We don't want you. Next up, I want people that hadn't done their homework, you better start learning and recognize legends and the importance of legend support of and for Feinbaum Nation and the SEC. Whenever things get tough on the show, notice how he pulls together these callers and stuff that want to quit and all that kind of stuff. It's important. Next up, and I don't want to hear no mess from the University of Georgia fans, but Joey, they called yesterday. He picked his coach, DeBoer, over Kirby Smart. Let me tell you why this was important to me. the relentless, the undeterred, unapologetic support of their program from head to toe is one reason the entire country has and continues to chase the University of Alabama's football program's success on the field. And I want people to keep that in mind. Next thing, Coach Feinbaum, the 2000-2001 season saw 58,710 college football players. That's from the National Football Foundation and the NCAA. And this past year, we watched as 81,000 college football players took to the field, with another 16 schools and universities announcing plans to field teams in the coming few years. Now, this is totally my opinion right here. The transfer portal, you'll never convince me that the NCAA isn't smart enough to have overlooked so many things that we as fans may take, you know, that we think that the NCAA isn't smart on. Number one, the transfer.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.